have staff ready, the Legion Community Services District. We're going to ask that all those, well, let me read this opening statement. This is the time and place for hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider revision of a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit in the matter of the Lolita Community Services District. This item has been properly noticed. She explained the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand? Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Thank you. This time we'll start with staff's presentation.
Good morning, Board. My name's Lisa Bernard. I am staff to the Regional Water Board with the permitting unit. And the item before you, as you mentioned, for consideration is a renewal of an NPDES permit, a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit for the community of Lolita and their wastewater treatment facility. The updated permit carries over many similar effluent limitations from the previous permit, but also includes a new effluent limitation for chronic toxicity, requirements for two special studies, as well as increased monitoring, which we'll discuss in more detail later in the presentation. And at this time, I'd like to enter the file into the hearing record. So, just to get you oriented, here is the community of Lolita. It's about 5 minutes north of where we are today. So here's Highway 101. And the wastewater treatment facility is this little tiny thing right here. And they discharge their treated effluent through a subsurface pipe into this wetland area. In the wintertime, this overflows along this unnamed slough and enters the Eel River. So this picture shows two aeration basins at the wastewater treatment facility. And we're looking at about half of the entire treatment facility right here. And the other half I'll show you in the next slide. Lolita is a small rural community with a population of about 750 people. It's primarily residential, serves one small industrial discharger, which is the Lolita Cheese Factory, and has a limited number of commercial businesses and an elementary school. This picture is taken facing the opposite direction, so the aeration basins that we just looked at are over here. And the entire wastewater treatment facility consists of a grinder, a bar screen, the two aeration basins, this clarifier, chlorination and dechlorination capability, an emergency generator, which the community put in response to a cease and desist order adopted by this board, and also a sludge holding tank, which is behind the operations building here, which is pumped routinely by a licensed hauler of their accumulated solids. So this is similar photo, actually exactly the same photo that we just saw. So the wastewater treatment facility is here again. And Highway 101 on the right-hand side, just to sort of orient you. Our basin plan prohibits discharges to the Eel River and its tributaries between May 15th and September 30th. And so to comply with this prohibition, we've issued permits allowing seasonal and year-round discharges to percolation or treatment ponds. These discharges have typically been viewed as discharges to land. However, based on staff's best professional judgment, our recent evaluation indicates that the primary function of Lolita's discharge area, which is this area right here, may be wetland habitat, and therefore discharges to this location could be in violation of our basin plan prohibitions. So the proposed permit requires the district to perform a special study to determine if the discharge area is consistent with wetlands and surface water characteristics. And if the study demonstrates that wastewater is being discharged to surface water during the prohibition season, the district would need to evaluate other compliance options. Alternatively, they could skip the characteristics study and just look at different options to comply with the basin plan prohibitions. For example, irrigating this area during the summertime or something like that. In addition, our basin plan also prohibits discharges to the Eel River and its tributaries in excess of 1% of the receiving water flow during the allowable discharge season. And it's unclear at this time whether or not discharges to this small area actually comply with that, if there's 100 times receiving water flow to the one time of effluent, treated effluent. So the district would need to do a study to show what the hydraulic nature is of this area to determine what the flows are. And if the flows don't show themselves to be at 1%, then they would need to come up with some compliance alternatives. This is a close-up picture of that wetland area that we just saw in the aerial on the last photo that's receiving the discharges of treated effluent. Under the expiring permit, the district was only required to monitor biological oxygen demand and total suspended solids on a monthly basis. However, the regulations for wastewater treatment facilities include treatment standards which are expressed both monthly and weekly. So in order to, and also most MPAS dischargers are required to sample for these parameters at least weekly. So in order for us to compare the discharge at Lolita to the regulations and bring them into compliance with what other dischargers are doing, we're increasing their sampling from monthly to weekly for biological oxygen demand and total suspended solids. Also, although we have receiving water limitations for this district for this permittee, we've never asked them to actually sample receiving water, so there will now also be routine receiving water sampling required in this permit. Well, that's not where I want to go. During the term of the previous order, Lolita's monthly reporting or routine reporting reported chronic toxicity in the effluent 3 out of 8 times that it was tested. And based on the available information, the Regional Water Board staff has determined that the discharges from Lolita's wastewater treatment facility have reasonable potential to cause or contribute to chronic toxicity in their receiving water. So therefore, the new permit has established chronic toxicity effluent limitations. So comments were received during the public comment period from the Lolita Community Service District regarding design flow, pH effluent limitations, and the seasonal prohibition period, as well as receiving water monitoring stations. After consideration of the public comments, Regional Water Board staff made a change to the receiving water monitoring stations as requested by the district. And this now requires that reporting that the district only report flows, which is consistent with the prior permit, only report flows from the Scotia gauging station rather than adding in the Van Dusen. And this type of monitoring basically provides us enough information to show what the monitoring was intended for. So a copy of the public comments that were received as well as our responses are in your attached to your agenda package. Do I have the last one? No, that was it. The proposed permit will provide appropriate coverage until 2013, including increased monitoring that will provide technical information needed to evaluate compliance with secondary treatment standards, as well as special studies aimed at correcting potential violations of our basin plan requirements. So staff recommends that you adopt the permit as proposed. Okay. Can I answer any questions for you?
One, if I may, just your response, staff's response to comments, where you agreed, then the changes that have been made in the document in front of us.
I'm sorry, what's the question?
Do
you want to know where the... So, originally...
Van Dusen out, and it reads only Scotia.
Right, and you want to know where that is?
No, I'm just...
So, in the prior permit, to comply with the 1% requirement in the basin plan, we have been allowing... Lolita, instead of monitoring the flow in this actual receiving water, which is tributary to the Eel River, they've been measuring their compliance with the 1% requirement based on the Scotia Gauging Station, which is in the main portion of the Eel River. And for Fortuna's permit, which we just recently adopted, we have them using not just the Scotia Gauging Station, but actually adding in the Grizzly Creek Gauging Station as well, which is in the Van Dusen River. So they add those two flows together to see if they're compliant with the 1%, because unfortunately that's the best information we have from a USGS monitoring station as to what flows would be in that area. And it's easier for the community of Lolita to go ahead and just use one gauging station, and their flows are so small that it doesn't really make a difference if we just use the Scotia gauging station. So rather than having them go through the calculations of adding those two together, they just asked for it to be simplified.
Okay.
And we have the special study as well, which really is going to end up superseding that measurement.
I just had one question to staff, and that is, especially in regard to the smaller districts, do you think they can comply with the monitoring provisions and not run afoul of mandatory minimum penalties? I mean, were they tailored to the maximum extent allowed by law for a smaller district? Because sometimes we take boilerplate, and then it hits a small district, and then we end up with a mandatory minimum penalty problem.
Well, I think for the biological oxygen demand and the total suspended solids requirements, I think that it's appropriate for us to have them sampling weekly. A monthly monitoring really does not provide us with enough information to say that they're complying with that treatment requirement on a routine basis. As to the mandatory penalties, you know, unfortunately, I don't think that those necessarily are geared towards the smaller dischargers, but I don't have any control over
well,
that.
But some of the smaller districts don't hire professional engineers, and sometimes we get boilerplate. And first of all, the state legislature copied the program in New Jersey. In New Jersey, they found they had to be very careful what went in the gate for requirements or didn't work. California's undergoing the same process, and I just want to make sure the small people that we're looking out, we want to protect water quality, so that's
right.
Don't feel hammered that way, but making sure that the monitoring requirements are needed and that they can reasonably comply with them to keep them out of mandatory minimum penalty, because that doesn't do you any good or us or any of us any good. So that's all. It's just making sure we're sort of looking out to make sure that this will work.
Well,
And unfortunately, a lot of the small ones don't hire the professional engineer to advise them on how to do it. That's the issue.
And if they have older plants and it's harder to comply, there's a lot of problems with being involved with a smaller district.
But you did what you could.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Unless there are others, one speaker card, district, Marcus Drum.
Hello, Marcus Drum, General Manager of Lolita Community Services District. Some of what I'm going to say is a repeat of my comments. I understand that pH, the pH limitation in the basin, and again, some of our issues are apparently not with the EPA standards, but the basin plan, as it's interpreted, as you can see. When we, what I hear anyway, when the plant was built 50 years ago, we did discharge into the Eel River. Since then, the Eel River has moved. So, whoops. When just that the basin plan requirements are going to apply to the entire area, including our discharge point, which is not going to be there. At our volumes, there's no way we could adjust anything if we were mixing with the Eel River. It becomes a problem when we start looking at the more dilute systems. The pH requirement of 6.5, if, again, I'm repeating myself, if that was 6.0, we would have, we may still have an occasional violation because we do dechlorinate, chlorinate and then dechlorinate. But We have a huge INI problem. It's a common problem in the whole Erie River Valley. Last I looked, I was just looking this up last night, USGS site, rain falls out of the sky at a pH of 5.6, which means we're having to adjust the pH of rainwater up so that it runs through our plant and doesn't cause a violation. Just something to be aware of when you look at the basin plan. The prohibition on discharges between May 15th and September 30th, our entire system is gravity-fed. Our discharge point is gravity-fed. Our discharge point is below the low end of the floodplain. The 100-year floodplain abuts the wastewater treatment facility. So the seasonal discharge that happens through that tributary occurs because the water table rises and falls. We have been out of compliance with these dates, and it's because the rainfall didn't occur in December, January, and February as normal, and the water table, unless we go ahead and block water flowing through the estuary, which I'm pretty sure a lot of people would have problems with, there would be no way for us to stop that pond discharge. The other concern I have is with, or actually I had one request, might as well get it on the record, that we switch our permit reporting period from December to July to July. Like most water treatment plants, we operate on a seasonal basis. In the middle of December is when everything is happening. July, we have a lot easier time running with the lower flows. The last one actually has to do with the special studies. I have no problem conducting them. One of the things I want to see, a proper description of where we are discharging. It's, like I said, it's an inherited system from 50 years ago. A couple of concerns. One, the discharge pipe that we use to discharge through that is shared both with a building in town when it was built. Downspouts from the Humboldt Creamery building go out through that 12-inch pipe. In addition, through dye testing, I found that some of the stormwater drains go into that pipe. We run through the wastewater treatment facility, and then our effluent treated goes into that pipe. So we share that pipe with them, and I'm actually not sure who at this point actually owns it, whether we have an easement, whether the creamery owns it. And the way that stormwater requirements are rising, just like wastewater requirements, my guess is no one's going to claim it. I've talked to the County Public Works about getting their stormwater drains disconnected from that pipe and emptying to the fields. They're not excited about that prospect. So that's an issue that's going to have to be resolved. The other concern I have with the special studies is that at the very end of this, for pragmatic reasons, we're going to end up with an irrigation system. But presently, we treat it, as you can see there, we discharge treated wastewater into a pond system that's seasonal that goes through a 2-mile oxbow before it hits the Eel River. I don't know that any irrigation system we come up with is actually going to be more buffered or have less environmental impact at the end of the day, but it is going to cost a lot of money. I guess I'm just expressing that concern. The system we have is very buffered, certainly by the time it hits the Eel River, probably long before that. And I just wanted to express those concerns and then be available if you had any questions.
Okay. Board member questions? Mr. Massey?
Do you have the new requirements that are going to be in place for monitoring? Do you have any idea what this is going to cost your district?
The priority pollutants, we're going to run two series this year. I just got a quote from North Coast Labs. It's going to be $2,000 per series. We just, at least I have a verbal that we passed our chronics and acutes this spring. But that, actually with the cost of shipping that to Fairfield, I end up driving it. That's $3,000 to $3,500 per test. That's two tests a year. In addition, the regular testing we have now, which we is performed, what we have performed outside by Fortuna Labs, it's probably another $1,300, $1,400 a year. Right now, I'm looking at between 5 and 10% of the total operational budget to go to testing. It's not, I don't want to say that I'm not interested in violations and reducing them, but as long as we have the INI problems we have, and as long as I can put the majority of that to compliance plans, as long as those violations aren't going severely up, that's money that needs to be spent. I don't want it to take an increasing part of the budget. At least during the summer months, we have BOD and TSS removal of above 95%. I don't suspect that we're going to have any problems with those increased requirements. I haven't seen, I don't know what penalties are going to be attached to violations that occur because of testing the receiving water. My understanding at this point is that that's information gathering. And that's not going to be subject to fines. That's my understanding. It's not on the... Go ahead.
Any violations of the receiving water monitoring would be discretionary, not mandatory penalties. Those are only... mandatory penalties only apply to effluent violations.
And that... again, part of that is because we're... there is a real question about the volume of the receiving water. If, and apparently the plan is that the receiving water is that pond. If the receiving water is the Eel River at the end of the Oxbow, I can test that forever, and it won't be my violation. Even the pond that we discharge into actually is the edge of a cattle field. Cows regularly are in it. So between sharing that discharge point with the stormwater drain and probably 30, if not more, acres of land that discharge into that pond, what I contribute to what other contributes, and how much volume, the mixing point's going to be a question. You know, I don't know what kind of mixing with the volume we're looking at. At this point, a lot of that is so tenuous as to what kind of mixing we're going to have, what kind of volumes we're going to have, that I'm not sure what the results are going to show. I don't know if that answered your question at all, or if I was completely
wrong. I was simply interested in the amount that we're spending for monitoring.
Five and ten percent, which budget last year was $180,000 for wastewater, so $10,000. It may, and the studies are obviously, studies are called testing, that will skyrocket until those studies are done. I don't even know what those are going to cost at this point.
You said you have a problem with INI.
Yes.
Permit has in it permitted flow for average wet weather flows. Are these numbers ones at work? Or 143,000 gallons.
This last winter, the peak flow for a day we had over 2 inches of rain, and this peak, this is minute by minute, was over 500,000. I believe our peak day was over 400,000. Last year, our highest peak day was over 600,000. 2000, and again, some of these numbers are not exact, but I believe 2000, said we report December to December. 2006, we treated, I want to say, 46 million gallons after providing 20 million gallons of fresh water. This year, we provided 19.5 million gallons of fresh water and treated 34, 35. So we're getting there, but again, depending on the rain season and how fast it falls, how high the water table goes, the correlation to INI is inexact. And we're in the middle of a 5-year INI compliance plan, so we expect further progress on that.
And I can't quite put my finger on the requirement for pH testing, but I found you were talking about mixing zones, and my recollection is that it stipulates that it's at the end of the pipe.
The discharge point is at the end of the wastewater plant. What my, again, my concern was that if fines were going to be levied based on changes in pH, although that's really, again, I'm not that worried about it, but anything that's going to affect the background water of something that there's still questions about how much is flowing through that at any one time. And in our case, we're discharging into a basically what was a gravel ditch, which then empties into a pond, which seasonally discharges. That pond flow is going to be so slight that if I take the test right at that mixing point, I don't know what temperature difference I'm going to see, if any. I mean, it's half a mile pipe, so I would assume that it was ambient by then. But, you know, some of those tests, I don't know how much good mixing I'm going to get and therefore how much effect I'm going to see. And that's based on the background flow of that pond tributary versus the eel. If it was the eel volume, I wouldn't say anything. I have absolute confidence in that. But not knowing how much volume is traveling through the pond, total, much less at the mixing point at the edge of the pond, hard for me to say what that's going to show at this point.
Receiving water limitations are on page 14. Is that what you're looking for? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's not the one I was looking for, but I'll see if I come across it.
You're looking for frequency? That would be in attachment A.
Well, I am going to raise in the district's letter, it's the purple pages, page 2, where the request on the design flow requested that you read 100,000 average dry weather and response being it'd be a last minute change. I have two responses. One is I'm always, when we're revising permits, like to see what we're revising from, to see where the base we're working from. And then I'm just struck by in the page 6 of the first of the yellow pages in 2. Section 2, findings, paragraph A, background, I'm on page 6, section 2, findings, paragraph A, background, fourth, fifth line, saying that in December of 2005, it was applied for permit renewal to discharge up to 0.1 MGD.
That actually precedes my tenure. I'm not sure what was requested. The information I'm submitting is from I think it was 1978, but a 1970-something report of changes done to the wastewater plant. This isn't like a recent change, so I can certainly work with staff to put together what we have as the original design parameters. I was hoping to substitute basically old information and not a new redesign. Sometimes when things get started, they get started off on the wrong foot, and then it's just too hard to change them. If I have time, I can work with the staff and get the most current information and hopefully get it implemented into the report. At this point, we don't discharge 81.
Right.
We discharge 55 to 60, and we just lost one of our two largest industries, which was the dry milk plant. So we'll discharge even less than that, and as we address I&I, even less than that. So at this point, we're around 50,000 gallons on a dry weather day. It doesn't approach that 81,000. I was just, the longer it goes where that 81 gets enshrined, the tougher it's going to be to change it. Well, and this just seemed like our opportunity.
We're minutes away from enshrining it. We're not talking about something that you can come back and.
Well, the response actually said that.
That appears to be probably a typographical error that's missing an 8, so it probably should say 0.81, which is actually what the permitted flow is currently at this time.
It should say 0.081.
The other thing is that if we did increase the flow at the wastewater treatment facility, the permitted design flow, to 1 million gallons a day rather than...
not 1 million gallons. 0.1.
Oh, 100.
100,000.
Oh, I see. I'm going back to my chair.
Mr. Chair.
I sense movement from my lawyerly side, so I'm going to go there first, okay. Mr. Board Member.
Well, I think what Lisa was starting to say is that when you do increase the capacity, then we would have to go through an anti-degradation analysis, and I don't think we have the information at the time to do that. But that's something to keep in mind when we go through the next permit cycle. That's something that we should probably address if we want to increase that. There's certain findings that have to be made, and it's doable. We didn't have the information.
Well, I'm looking at a document dated September 1978. I think is where the 100,000 number comes from. So
it's I can work with staff over whatever time period is necessary. I guess what I was hoping to do was avoid is to use previous design information and avoid a new study whether there might have been an error in whether applying for the permit or otherwise that they said. I know in 77 they said this is what we expect it to be in 77, but we're designing for 100,000. If I can get the 100,000, again, using older information, I much prefer that than a new study when the plant was already designed to handle that.
It goes by what the permit said. So if the permit had a design capacity and then we're increasing that, we're potentially decreasing.
But my guess is 1978 precedes the NPDES system pretty close. So it may have always been a higher capacity.
Well, I think it depends on what the permit has said in the past, so your previous permits. I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying. Okay,
yeah, I can see
how this has been, again, enshrined,
right.
And I was hoping, again, it's not a point because we're not discharging that in dry weather flow. If we approach that, presently the Humboldt County growth is negative. So if we ever approach that, we're not approaching the limits of the plant. I can see we'd approach the limits of the permit, and I'm good visiting that, especially in light of the other studies we're going to have to do. We're going to have to do the study anyway in the next 5 years. So.
Also, your permit fees are based on your permitted flow. So as you increase your permitted flow, your permit fees will be commensurate.
Are they? Is it a scale or is it a group? Okay. I don't think we'll bump up to a different category if it's categorical, that's why. Okay.
Mr. Madison.
If I understood you correctly, you said that you have lost one of your industrial customers?
Well, they have been declining for a while, but we've been told as at the end of this last December that the Humboldt Creamery is not operating the dry milk plant. Either they still have leaks or something, but they went from basically 25,000 cubic feet a month. They're down to about 4,000, 3,000, so my guess is that's leaks. I still have to tour that facility and come up with a new rate recommendation. Just thinking, they were in operation last summer. They will not, or they'll be in a vastly lower operation this summer, so my dry weather flow will drop.
Okay.
I haven't quantified it yet.
Okay. So, and the population of Lolita is basically static. I mean, it's not likely to grow.
Well, we actually have a development going in. Right now, it has been static for 30 years. It has the possibility of 30 to 40% population growth, which takes us up to 1,000. At this point, as far as the wastewater plant, it's impacted, one, by volume, two, by BOD. The cheese factory in town has a higher impact of BOD than the entire rest of the town put together. When the creamery was in service, the two industries in town, the creamery and the cheese factory, used 25% of all raw water, or it wasn't raw, it was treated water. So it's going to affect wastewater operation, the plant, but probably BOD at this point is a bigger concern for the wastewater treatment facility, and with the loss of the creamery, it's going to actually have the bigger drop in impact to us than the volume. But at 20 plus thousand cubic feet a month, we could put in a lot of house. Of course, someone may occupy that building at some point, but at 20,000 cubic feet a month that we could replace, we could put in a lot of houses. We don't expect the impact to be, well, we permitted it, so we don't expect the impact to be a problem.
Overall, with this permit the way it is, and there are differences, particularly with the study, the discharge, et cetera, can you live with it?
The concern is that the some of the testing that at this point is developing background information. I know we have a slight disagreement, but developing background information, if that testing becomes permanent, and I'm not talking about solids, I'm talking about priority pollutants, doing that, this year it's going to be twice a year, but if that becomes a permanent part, some of the other testing, it raises the price of testing. We can live with it. We don't really have a choice. We have other operational costs that are greater than testing at this point. Testing is way below wages and I think still below our PG&E bill. While the study, and if we have a capital improvement where we have to install irrigation, is a problem, but that's still indeterminate. And in any case, after 50 years, it seems like a good time to reassess what we're doing. So, again, I don't have a problem getting more information as long as it's useful. I have a problem getting more information that at the end of the day will cause large changes but not help the environment in any way or not result in safer operation. Spending money for its own sake is going to bother me, but I think it bothers everyone. And we're not being singled out in this, so.
No, you're not. You're absolutely not. You said you had, I believe, a $180,000 operational. What's your monthly service fee?
We're actually on county assessment, $370. Well, it's going to change again because of the creamery. Presently, it's $370 per resident, and we haven't noticed a big difference in water usage between family residences and residents, so that's across the board. Mm-hmm. The cheese factory has their own rate. The creamery has their own rate. Food services, which are not real restaurants, but the local
deli
store has stuff. We have a coffee shop going in. We have a bar. Those are $850 a year presently, but again, those are in flux. I actually have to do another rate study next month, because with the loss of the creamery and the new permit, I got to come up with a 3 or 4 year plan.
As you say, you're not being singled out in this. This is an ongoing process that's the result of more human beings on the planet. In that, if you can live with it, I think this is about as good as you're going to get in many, many respects. And just to make you feel better, I was just involved in raising a rate for single-family dwelling to slightly over $1,000 a year in a low-income community.
That doesn't make me feel better.
No, it doesn't make you feel any better. It made me feel terrible. Thank you.
Other comment? Questions? Concluding staff comments?
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to adopt this permit.
Second.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. And we will go on to the next item and we'll figure out what we'll do about lunch after or during. I'm not sure how long this
is. Is Caltrans?
Are you doing the day garden?
I'm going to Caltrans.